Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Sports Lounge. Today I am with Proof Negative, and I am JC. What we're going to talk about at the beginning is the NFL scores from last week. And in week five, we had the St. Louis Rams defeat the Cardinals 17-3. The Pittsburgh Steelers defeated the Eagles 16-14. The Colts defeated the Packers 30-27. The Giants defeated the Browns 41-27. The Falcons defeated the Redskins 24-17. The Dolphins defeated the Bengals 17-13. The Ravens defeated the Chiefs in a ho-hum game 9-6. The Seahawks defeated the Panthers 16-12. The Bears defeated the Jaguars 41-3 after being tied 3-3 at halftime. The Patriots defeated the Broncos 31-21. The 49ers defeated the Bills 45-3. The Vikings defeated the Titans 30-7. The Saints defeated the Chargers 31-24. And the Texans defeated the Jets 23-17. On Thursday night, we had the Pittsburgh Steelers go to the Tennessee Titans, and the Titans won 26-23. Hey, Proof, are you here with me today?
Of course.
It's good hearing from you again. What I would like to do, Proof, is to talk to you about Major League Baseball for starters. There's a couple of things that came to my mind. One, first of all, congratulations that your team, the Cleveland Indians, landed Terry Francona.
Well, I was hoping for Alomar or Francona, so I was glad to see both of those were the two finalists. I think either one of those two would have done an outstanding job with that team.
So do I. And just to let everybody know, Terry Francona is the ex-Red Sox manager who won two World Series titles as a member of the Red Sox. And his staff offers Sandy Alomar a bench coach position on the staff. And to add to that, the Red Sox fired Bobby Valentine on the 4th of October.
Yeah, I personally think the Red Sox firing Francona was a very stupid move.
It was a horrible move. Now, Proof, on... Did you notice how the five game series went in baseball this year, where the visiting team with the lesser record got the first two games at home, followed by the final three games for the team that had the best record? I was kind of concerned with that because I thought that maybe this would give an edge to the lesser team that was in the playoffs. It turns out that three out of four of the home team actually won their series, being the Nationals losing last night to the Cardinals.
Three of the four went to five games, and one went to four games.
Right. So it was
or
three.
They all go to five.
All four went to five.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
I noticed what I said after I said it.
But it was very interesting. I thought it would hurt the team that should have had the home field advantage, but it didn't. It actually worked itself out through due process. So I was very happy to see that process did work. Now the Cardinals beating the Nationals last night, that was the Nationals winning 6-0 and in the third inning, and next thing you know, they lose 9-7. I thought that they had the Cardinals beat when it was 6-3, and it looked like they had gotten it back under control. I turned the TV off. I wake up this morning, they lost that game.
So let me ask you, if they had Steven Strasburg even in the bullpen, would that have helped?
I'm not sure. It seems like the Cardinals, at the very beginning of that game, the Cardinals could only, they had two hits and one run after four innings, and they were not able to get more than one hit in an inning until the fifth inning. And but once they started getting hit, it just wouldn't turn off. So I'm not sure if Strasburg would have helped because, you know, the Nationals are going to be second-guessing themselves. I mean, they had the best record in the major league. They're going to be second-guessing themselves throughout the offseason on that.
But I have to admit, I am so turned off right now because I was looking for a different team to make the playoffs this year. I'll be honest, I'm at the point almost where I'm bored with baseball, and it was real exciting for the first round of the playoffs, the end of the season. It had my attention, but after it all, the whole world in the baseball world predicted the Tigers versus Yankees and the Cardinals versus the Giants. And people are predicting the Tigers versus the Cardinals in the World Series. And it's like it doesn't matter how exciting it is, the same four teams get in there. And I'm not going to be watching any more baseball the rest of the year.
It's strange you say that because at the beginning of the season, that's exactly what I was saying. It's like the NBA. There are X amount of teams that are viable, and then the rest of them are there for padding stats.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, the NBA and Major League Baseball weigh heavily on individual stats, whereas the NFL does not weigh heavy as much on individual stats as they do team stats. So, I mean, there's individual stats in the NFL, but it seems like the biggest weight is carried on the leading scorer in the NBA and the most home runs and in the Major League Baseball and in the NFL we're talking about the team that scores the most. We're not talking about what particular player, unless you go to a fantasy standpoint, but then in every sport it's an individual from a fantasy standpoint. So I don't see it either. I think what they need to do is they need to construct in both of those leagues and get rid of some of the garbage that, and I shouldn't call individuals garbage, but they should construct to the point where they have more competitive teams. So every year it's you know, you're not going to end up with the same end result.
Well, I just thought that at least one of those four series, and I predicted at the beginning of the season, and everybody laughed at me, by the way. I predicted the Cincinnati Reds would not only win their division, but they would win the World Series. That was my early season prediction. And people shut up when they saw the Reds win the division, and I thought for sure when they were ahead 2-0 over the Giants that they would have been the one different team that you don't see in the playoffs.
Correct. And it's amazing. And now, wasn't Cincinnati the team with a better record over the Giants? So if they went 2-0, that meant that they went to San Francisco and beat them twice in San Francisco.
No, the last three games were played in San Francisco.
So the Giants had the better record then.
Wait, no, maybe. I don't remember. The visiting team won every game in that. So the Giants, I guess, must have had the worst record.
Correct. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought. It was amazing that that the visiting team won every game in that contest. So, what do you think about from a postseason standpoint at this? You know, up to this point, I know what you just said, but what do you think about the Detroit-New York matchup and the St. Louis-San Francisco matchup? Do you see – I know everybody's looking at Detroit-St. Louis. Do you see a team – do you see the Yankees or the Giants pushing through?
Yeah, I see a Yankees versus the Cardinals World Series. There's something I learned in sports is that if a team gets lucky, either lucky to make it into the playoffs or or in the first round of a series or a playoff in general, and karma brings them to a point where they win a game that's questionable, they tend to go really far. And I'm
that's
talking
true.
About the St. Louis Cardinals here in regards to that mess up, that infield fly rule. Because if it was called, in my opinion, the way it should have been called, that game is completely different. And I see the Braves beating the Cardinals.
And that was where I was going to segue to. That infield fly rule now weighs very heavy now that the Cardinals are still in. This could be the Atlanta Braves right now. Which means now, if it was the Atlanta Braves, would the Giants be favored?
Probably. I mean, the Giants' pitching staff, I have to hand it to them. They are superior to most teams.
Yes, they are. And they proved that going into Cincinnati and sweeping three games.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, for the most part, the five game race was actually pretty exciting to some degree. I'm not an avid baseball watcher, but I did get the opportunity to watch a few of the games because it was just exciting watching them go back and forth on some of the drama. So it was the drama that actually brought me to the game.
Yeah, but the thing, such as that whole infield fly rule, I would like to see two wild cards do a best of three and everybody else just take a series off and go enjoy your time.
I
just think one bad call completely ruins the it's like the butterfly effect, I suppose. I just don't want to see one bad call just be the reason why somebody makes it in when you only have one game to play. If it was a series, then you could say, hey, you should have won one of the other two games.
That's true. That is true. So where do you think baseball needs to go at this point as far as do you like the five team format in each league, or do you think it was more exciting
before? I like
the four?
Five team format. The only thing is I'm not a, maybe it's the baseball purist in me. I just don't like a one game playoff. Baseball as a whole is not conducive to a one-game playoff, and I would like to see a three-game playoff. I don't care if they play a doubleheader one day and a single game the other. I don't really care. And I don't think adding a day or two to the baseball schedule as it is now, there's not much difference whether the series, whether baseball ends November 3rd or November 5th. I mean, it's still stretched into November. At this point, I think baseball can afford that.
I like the five team format. I think the one game playoff, I have to get accustomed to that. You have two wild card teams playing against one another to see who's going to meet the best team in that league, and maybe you do. How do you do it? 1-1-1 or. Or do you send them both to neutral sites and let them play 3 days in a row? I think that would be a better suggestion so that you can cut down on travel costs.
Hey, I'm okay with that.
The bottom line is they're not going to be playing at home anyway. So, you know, not being the favorite.
Or because there's two wild card teams, the odds are that there is no – the teams don't usually have the same record. The one with the better record gets the home field.
The reason why I'm against that is because then once that team plays at home, now you gotta travel one day and then
That if one wild card team has 89 wins and the other wild card team has 92 wins, the team with 92 wins gets the home field advantage for the whole for the three game series.
Oh, that's not bad either. Now, if they keep the same format on the five game series with the way they did just now, that would be a great idea. However, if they change it back to where it's like two and one, where the two is in the favored team first, well then maybe you have the game, the playoff in that in the team that you're supposed to meet ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
That way you don't have to go anywhere. If you win, you stay there. If you lose, you go home.
Yeah.
I mean, either way, and you're right. The home field advantage, that actually, I like that. I actually like that thought process, Bruce, where all three games is there if necessary.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
I mean, baseball, you're used to traveling one place and having a series, so just moving after one game doesn't make much of a difference, but I like the concept of just the better record should have some kind of better recognition.
I agree.
But I wasn't really a fan of the worst team getting the home field for games one and two. I just felt that changed the whole dynamic of the series. I mean, it worked out, I suppose, because the better team can overcome a one-game deficit. But at the same time, if I was the Detroit Tigers, I want Justin Verlander pitching at home rather than having Anibal Sanchez open up for my game three.
What was interesting, though, was that, I mean, I'm serious. I was very concerned about that. And I was thinking, okay, this is going to open up a can of worms that Major League Baseball doesn't want right now. And I was shocked that it actually worked out. I was totally shocked.
Yeah, I mean, my team's notwithstanding, this has been pretty exciting. I just was hoping for a different outcome, but hey, at least there was a reason to watch the Dog and Pony Show, in my opinion.
Right. So, what do you think about the next steps for the Cleveland Indians? Do you think that they should now start allowing Francona's team, along with management, to start bringing in depth so that we can get this together?
Well, knowing the Cleveland Indians, they're not going to spend all that much on free agency. Although, if at the same time, if they're going to spend coin on a manager, which is something I totally wouldn't have expected, I thought they would have went with Sandy Alomar, and I'd have been fine with that because I thought that he would have been a lot cheaper than the money that Francona would bring in. But maybe they're at a point where... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But to bring in Francona, you're in a situation where he's not going to be there for a dog and pony show. He's there to win it all, and you're going to have to be a little bit compliant to him, or he'll step down.
Right, and I have not looked through the free agent roster yet this time around, and I don't know what it is there because. I don't know why Cleveland could not have been where Oakland or Baltimore was this year. They were right there up until August 1st, and then the bottom just fell out. So I don't know if it's just getting people motivated through the dog days of summer, or I don't know what it is, but you don't go from being three games over 500 in the thick of July to almost losing 100 games. It's surreal.
I think the problem is that Cleveland did not have depth, and that's the reason why I keep bringing that up, because if you notice Francona, when he was in Boston, and it took him a while, but once he got enough depth, even if he took a star out, he had a viable player that may not be as good as that star, but would be a decent plug-in to do some damage. I mean, he bring in a guy that people haven't heard of in a while, and next thing you know, this guy is belting one out the park or doing a triple or inside the park home run or fantastic defensive job. Cleveland has a good starting group and was fortunate enough that they were able to piece Miller together up through that late July, early August time frame. And then all of a sudden when pieces started coming apart and needing time off and health issues, it seems like from that point, the dam broke.
So, well, I don't know if it was that. I mean, part of it was that where the lineup might have some holes. But overall, the pitching was a huge disappointment this year. I think they went 7 or 8 games in a row where the starter didn't even go 5 innings.
That was correct.
They were just getting blown out in the first, second, and third innings. I mean, you're 4 outs into the game, and you're down 8-0.
Right. And now everybody's swinging for the doggone rafters when they should be rallying to get people on base to get rid of the doggone starters on the other team. They're actually shooting for the stars to try to get that home run. And you can't, you got to pick up the runs in pieces. And that also comes to coaching, too. That really does come to coaching. You've got to teach
the guy.
You could
say that, too. I mean, the offense at the same time, catcher Carlos Santana, he did spend a little bit of time on the disabled list, but he led the team with 18 home runs, which if you're going to have a team that's thinking about playoffs, you need at least one guy that's capable of 28 to 32 home runs. No one came close to 100 RBIs. I mean, you did have Jason Kipnis, who had over 30 steals combined with 16 home runs. It's like they have some nice pieces on the team, but nice pieces doesn't equate to having a team that is ready for some serious damage.
I agree with that. Now, what do you think about Doug Pfister and Andy Pettit in game one? Who do you see having the edge there?
Well, I think I'm looking towards Andy Pettit being able to bring home game one. I know that at this point, the lineup for Detroit is better than New York's. I'm not really that sold on Doug Pfister's playoff experience. And I know that Pettit is my age. He's 40. But I can't count the Yankees out when it comes to playoffs for anything.
So far this year, both of them had one start, and both of them managed to get through to the seventh inning. So they're both fairly equal, except Pfister was able to end up with a 2.57 ERA, and Pettit ended up with a 3.86. So they're fairly close as far as 2012 is concerned. I'm interested in seeing the first 3 or 4 innings only in this game, unless this game turns into either where both teams are hitting off both pitchers, or where both pitchers are clamping down both offenses. Because if the teams are hitting off both pitchers, they're going to be gone quick, and then it's going to be a slugfest from that point on. Who's the last bat that stands? However, if it turns into a pitcher's duel, that would be interesting in its own right, because now the question is, who's going to be the guy that's going to step up to break that doggone tie?
Thing I noticed in baseball, JC, is that whenever you think a game, if you come across two pitchers, say it was Verlander and CeCe for whatever reason, and you're thinking, right, okay, we're going to have a pitcher's duel here. And it turns out, whenever you think there's a pitcher's duel, because the two pitchers are some of the best in the league, it just turns out that the game is like 8-6 or 10-7 or something like that. For whatever reason, mm-hmm, whenever someone says this game's going to be a pitcher's duel, I always take the over.
I do too. Now, the other game shows Lance Lynn against Madison Burns.
Bumgarner,
yes. Okay. Now, here goes two guys in the playoffs. Lynn has a 7.36 ERA. Bumgarner has an 8.31 ERA. So this could turn out to be the pitcher duel.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I believe Lynn was an all-star. And he was on the all-star team this year. And Bumgarner was one of those that people thought should be on. But having Matt Cain and Vogelsong, Bumgarner was kind of the odd guy out.
Okay.
But I like the Giants at home on this one, I think. I just think that that Bumgarner is a very underrated pitcher in this. And I just I see having that extra day of rest for the Giants going to I think that's going to help them.
Now, what is the layout for the divisional championships? Is it 2-3-2? Okay.
Yes.
And then for the World Series, is it also 2-3-2?
No, yes, but whoever won the All-Star game gets the whole home field advantage.
Got it. In this case, the National League.
Yes.
So the Cardinals has everything to go with on this thing. So we can have a wild card team host.
Oh yeah. The other team could have the best record in all of baseball, but if the National League won the All-Star game, then they get the advantage.
I think that actually happened 1 year with the American League. I can't remember, but I don't like that rule. I don't like that rule. Hey, what we're gonna do at this time is we're gonna go ahead and segue over to commercial break, and we'll be back with JC in the Sports Lounge featuring Proof Negative.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
When we open our minds to the incredible, unlimited universe, we become participants in the active flow and infinite energy of life. We begin to live a much larger experience. We become free. In the magical universe, there are no coincidences and there are no accidents. You are here. You found Freedomizer Radio. See, the Power in You is about sharing the light of who you are, exploring different points of view, different perspectives on topics for better health for your mind and your body. Join Miss Cookie and me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 a.m. and Saturday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time and grow the light of who you are right here at Freedomizer Radio.
Hey, y'all, this is Ron with Ron's Media Maker. I would like to invite you to listen to my show every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And for our international listeners, that's 1,800 hours to 2,200 hours Greenwich Mean Time right here on Freedomizer Radio. Always interview a broad spectrum of guests ranging from entrepreneurs to the eclectic. I also like to keep you up to date on the latest breaking news in geopolitics, world events, astronomy, technology, science, and how it relates to the 21st century and an emerging global order. Be sure to visit our website at freedomizerradio.com, take part in our lively chat room, Visit our sponsors or read breaking news articles on our Twitter feed. You can also find out more about the wide variety of shows and hosts at freedomizerradio.com. If you'd like to comment or speak with a guest during the show, just give us a call at 347-324-3704.
Hey, welcome back. This is JC, and along with me is Proof Negative. Welcome to the Sports Lounge. We're going to go ahead and segue from this point to college football. Going to look at the top, the ranking for the most part. And there's been some major upsets as of late. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up is there's some teams that you normally don't see this high up in the rankings at this point. And I was just going to focus on, for the most part, the top five, top ten. Right now, ranked number one is Alabama. Number two is Oregon. Number three is South Carolina with their defeat of Georgia last week. Number four is Florida. Number five is West Virginia. Number six is Kansas State. Number seven is Notre Dame. Number eight is Ohio State. But Ohio State is ineligible for bowl activity this year. Number nine is LSU, who got beat last week or a couple of weeks ago. And number 10 is Oregon State, who is undefeated in the Pac-10 at this, or Pac-12 at this time. Proof, the question I have was, you're looking at the top five. We have Alabama, Oregon, South Carolina, and we also have West Virginia. In the top five, we normally don't see South Carolina and West Virginia. Florida, we see them in there from time to time. But
don't usually see Geno Smith either.
That's true. And as good as West Virginia is on the offensive side, don't forget that they gave up 63 points with a victory a couple of weeks ago. So their defense is not exactly the most stellar. They did, however, last week beat Texas at Texas, and this week they play Texas Tech. A lot of people are saying that they will lose this week against Texas Tech because Texas should have gotten them. Do you think Geno Smith is a real deal?
Well, I'm wondering, JC, if Geno Smith is how good he is going to look in Jacksonville next year.
If
someone can consistently put that many points on the board, I think I'm sold. What year is Geno Smith in? Junior? He's a junior, right?
He's a junior.
Okay, so I was not familiar with Geno Smith until this college football season. How was he last year?
The same way. The difference is he has more weapons around him this year. That's
okay.
The difference. Last year he didn't have as many weapons, and the freshman crew that they brought in has been very, very helpful in his stat padding. A lot of the receivers that he throws to, there's a couple of them that are freshmen. There's a sophomore sitting out there. There's a senior tight end and a senior wide receiver, and I think there's a couple of junior ones as well. But he has an arsenal of receivers that can actually catch the ball. So I think I like him better than Matt Barkley.
Well, yeah, I've been reading over the past week or two that Matt Barkley's stock, I guess, is really losing steam here. And they are the 11th ranked team in the league, or in football.
They were 18. They've been moving back up. When they lost to Stanford, what it showed me was that if you can get in Matt Barkley's face, he reminds me of Blaine Gabbert. He'll take a dive. Geno Smith, I've seen this guy get pounded by hanging in there and releasing the ball just before he gets creamed, and he gets back up to fight again. So I think that's very significant, because a lot of people don't understand how gutsy a quarterback has to be to take that beating and still withstand the fact that they can be the guy. All they have to do is just be smart about it. And sometimes that beating is better than doing what you see in pro football today with some of these quarterbacks. Great example. If you make the attempt to run towards Michael Vick, he's off to the races. Not that he's not a bad guy. It's just that I don't think he's a good guy. So, you know, and Michael Vick, the last 29 games, he's had 29 fumbles, of which he was able to recover 12. So that's a great stat for a guy that people were thinking was going to be in one of the NFL top quarterbacks this year. So I'm not
well,
even.
I think
I'm not. I'm drinking that Kool-Aid.
Quarterback available at this time.
Geno Smith, I think, is the best. I have Matt Barkley at number 3. I just wanted to point that out. I had Matt Barkley at number 3 overall. I just don't think he. Say again? You're breaking up right now, Proof. I can't hear you.
Oh. Number 2. Who's number 2?
I'll tell you right now. Hold on.
Okay.
Let me go to my sheet and bring it up so that you'll know. At quarterback, I have, come here. I have a database that I have everything in. I have Geno Smith, number 1, and I have, oh, no, I moved Matt Barkley back to number 2.
Okay.
I moved him slightly ahead of Tyler Wilson. And Geno Smith is a senior, by the way. Sorry about that. I have him slightly ahead of Tyler Wilson only because Tyler Wilson should have won a couple of games at Arkansas that he didn't. And I also have Tyler Bray, who's a quarterback at Tennessee, possibly moving from the second round to the first round, along with E.J. Manuel from Florida State. So, but E.J. Manuel slipped because of the fact that Florida State should have won a couple of weeks, was it last week or a week before? They lost a game that they should have won against North Carolina State at home. And they had a 16-0 lead at halftime, so I thought this game was going to be a blowout. And I turned the TV off. I was like, okay, I don't want to see this game anymore. What happened? North Carolina came from behind, only let Florida State end up with 122 yards total offense in the whole entire second half, and they pull out a 17-16 victory over Florida, undefeated number three ranked Florida State at the time. Unbelievable. So he slipped out of the first round and down to the late first, early second round because of that. Tyler Bray.
Well, I know there's at least two teams that are going to be desperate, in my opinion, to pick up another quarterback, and I think Jacksonville is there, and I think the Kansas City Chiefs are there.
I think the Kansas City Chiefs should have got one last year. But you're absolutely right. Jacksonville is there. And honestly, Blaine Gabbert would not be a bad backup. I just thought that, I feel that the problem in Jacksonville is not necessarily him as much as it is the offensive line. If you don't invest in that offensive line, I don't care how, you know, Aaron Rodgers is not doing good because of his offensive line. You know, he's doing better than what we expect, you know, than Blaine Gabbert. But we expect Aaron Rodgers to go completely bonkers in from a fantasy standpoint, and he's not giving up the points because his offensive line is erratic. And a great example of that was when Tom Brady was having problems with his offensive line, his stats actually took a hit. People don't realize how much emphasis there are on their offensive line to do well so that the quarterback can do well.
Any college running backs we need to keep our focus on at this point?
My favorite running back from last year, who ended up with an MCL at South Carolina, one of his first name is Marcus Lattimore.
Okay.
I'll give you more information on him right now. Lattimore is my favorite, but I don't think I have him ranked number one. Let's see here. Yes, I do. Marcus Lattimore, he's the only one I have going in the first round, first or second round, early second. He's a junior out of South Carolina. And I thought, honestly, I thought he was the best running back last year prior to getting hurt. I actually liked him better than I liked Trent Richardson. But he is a beast, and he's only a junior. So he has come back, and as you can see, South Carolina is in the top five. So they're at number three right now in both polls. But Marcus Lattimore is the guy out there. Alabama has turned another guy into a stud, Eddie Lacy. He's a junior, redshirt junior at that. I like Lattimore a little bit better because he's 6 feet 220, whereas this guy, Lacy, is 5'10", 220. So Lattimore's a little bit bigger, a little bit taller, I should say. They're the same size. And then there's this guy from Michigan State. His name is Le'Veon Bell, 6'2", 244, Jerome Bettis type of guy. I think he could be an interesting pickup if he goes to the draft this year. He's a junior as well.
Okay.
So those are the three, and I have another guy going in the second round, Andre Ellington out of Clemson. He's a redshirt senior, 5'9", 192. I think he's a little light in the pan, but, you know, he's jackrabbit quick, and he could make a difference. I think what Tennessee needs to do is they need to pick up Le'Veon Bell to put some beef on, you know, in a backfield so that they can start pounding people. And then maybe spring Chris Johnson once this guy wears down the dog on off the defensive line. And I can see them picking up Andre Ellington to think that they're going to have the next Chris Johnson, and that would be a huge mistake. So there's some good guys out there. Now, to me, the most talented position out of all the key positions on the offense side or from a fantasy standpoint, I think the most talented position is wide receiver. There's three surefire first-round picks at wide receiver. One is Keenan Allen out of he's a junior out of California, 6'3", 210. Justin Hunter, who is a junior out of Tennessee, this guy is pretty doggone good. He's 6'4", 200. And Robert Woods, wide receiver out of Southern Cal, he's a 6'1", 190-pound wide receiver. And I think of the three, I like Woods the best, but I have Woods number three overall. But I have all three going in the first round.
Okay.
Sorry to inundate you with that information. But And I have one tight end.
I better start learning some of these people because my team is pretty much out of everything already at this point.
Yeah, my team is actually doing pretty good. I fell from the ranks of the unbeaten last week. And that tight end, I have one tight end that might go in the first round. I got him late first, early second. His name is Tyler Eifert. He'll be playing today when Notre Dame plays against Stanford. And he's a redshirt junior, and he's 6'5", 252 pounds, and he's a very athletic stud. I mean, he's very, very athletic. Somebody to take a look at if you're looking for a tight end for the future. This guy can seriously catch. I like him better than Rudolph. I liked him a lot better than him. He's a lot more... Kyle Rudolph is a very talented tight end. Don't get me wrong. And he's very athletic. Tyler Eifert, to me, is more athletic than Rudolph is. That's saying a lot. Because Rudolph is turning into a nice little, you know, this is the second year in the NFL, and he's actually, you know, they left all their tight ends go and started this guy. So that tells you enough right there about Rudolph.
And so, hey, the Vikings are a lot better than anybody predicted.
They sure are. But the reason why they are is because of the schemes that they're playing. They, you know, it's Percy Harvin left, Percy Harvin right, Percy Harvin special teams, a little dose of Rudolph and all day, and you end up with a victory. You know,
so
and
it's Percy Harvin, basically.
And right now I think he is the most valuable player in the NFL if you get away from all the quarterbacks. I think he is the most valuable player. He's 80%
of their, so at this point.
He's 80% of their scoring. And yardage.
Right.
So
he's making Christian Ponder look better than anybody ever thought he would be.
Yes, and now that Jerome Simpson's off of his suspension, he can only get better. So that's a, you know, with Jerome Simpson sitting over there in the preseason, Jerome Simpson actually looked pretty doggone good with Christian Ponder out there. So now everybody's got to focus on Percy Harvin, but yet you can't take your eye off of Christian off of Jerome Simpson. And oh, by the way, you can't let Rudolph go by himself. And if you take your guys away from the box, all day goes up the middle. It's a nice offense. And they invested last year in what? Offensive line help.
Yes.
It's amazing how Khalil made a...
See, the Jags did that 2 years ago when they got Monroe and they got... I can't place the other guy, but I guess neither one panned out.
That's correct. They picked the wrong guy. They picked the wrong guy.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you do if you pick the wrong guy? You got to move forward and start looking for the guy. Now, one thing they can do is they can go into free agency this offseason. There's a boatload of offensive linemen that's going to be out there, and they can shore up some of that area. You know,
mm-hmm.
Now, will it hurt them by doing that? No. But they may look at it from a dollars and cents standpoint and say, I don't want to do that. So we'll see. The question is, do they want to win? And just like I had told you before, he's going to put out there the product that you see because his intent is to move them. I'm not sold on the owner keeping them in Jacksonville. The goal is to work on the Blaine Gabbert exhibit as long as he possibly can. Keep the talent that's out there. Move to L.A. and win a championship. That's exactly what he's going to do.
Yeah, but just because you move doesn't mean that you're going to build a championship.
But if he puts talent on the field right now, he won't be able to move them because of the fact that everybody's going to start coming to the games. He needs the stadiums empty to use that as an excuse to move.
Mm-hmm.
It's a business decision. You can only do what you can do. And he's in a situation where if he does that, you know, if I was to give you, okay, you have Maurice Jones-Drew. Let's say you end up with Percy Harvin, Greg Jennings, and Jordy Nelson on that team. Do you think people will start showing up?
Oh, of course.
Okay. So if he puts a winning team out there, he's not going to be able to move them because then he can't say, I did everything in my willpower to give you the best that I could do under the circumstances. Under the circumstances, he's piecemealing a team together, but it's going to take time to do so. He goes to L.A., he'll be able to do it right away because they're going to give him the money up front to do it. A lot of the stuff will be paid for by the community,
mm-hmm.
areas that he doesn't have to deal with. In Jacksonville, he has to pay everything, and he already made it clear he's not going to pay for everything. He wants the community to help out. The community is saying, I'm not helping out. So he's going to use that as a reasoning why he's not going to do it. He's not going to stick around. It's going to come back to the community, not helping him pay for the bill. Whereas in L.A., they're willing to pay for most of the bill. So it's a smart, from a business standpoint, it's smart on his part. From an integrity standpoint, I don't think it's smart at all. I think it's pretty, I think it's poor gamesmanship.
Right. I'm in favor of, I'm not really a fan of teams just moving cities just for greener pasture and to kind of sandbag your team on purpose. And
He's not doing it on purpose. He's making it clear.
Yeah, but what if the team that they have now, Blaine Gabbert wakes up and decides he's Tom Brady tomorrow, and he does that for the rest of the year? Would he be pissed because Jacksonville is winning all of a sudden?
I don't think he would be pissed at Jacksonville. Well, technically, in the long run, he would be, but I don't think that would be the reason why he'd be pissed. He would be pissed because once Jacksonville starts winning, people will start showing up at the game. So
that's what I'm saying.
You know, from a cascading standpoint, you're absolutely correct. He would be upset. From a business standpoint, he would be upset. But from a business standpoint, he would have to lead the charge for what's happening on the field, because he can't show the public that he's upset. That would be a way of the city now taking ownership and we want him out of here. So he can't do that.
But do you think that he actually, this past year, picked the best players that he was able to?
I like the fact that he picked I like the offensive lineman he picked, because if you do recall in one of the shows that we had, I made a mention that I think Blaine Gabbert's going to have a better season because I thought that he brought in who I thought was some quality offensive linemen who have not, unfortunately, they have not panned out. And unlike some of these doggone NFL owners, I'm willing to stand up and say, you know what, I thought that these guys would be quality, and it turns out that they're garbage. And I shouldn't say garbage, because sometimes it takes more than one season for a guy to get into the mix of everything. But I honestly thought that they would pan out a lot sooner than they have. Because I was very happy with their draft when they drafted those players. It just threw me off that they didn't pan out the way they should have. Threw me way off.
But then let me go back to what you were talking about with college and the wide receivers being of huge depth. Isn't wide receiver one of the hardest positions to come into and be successful in your rookie year?
Yes, it is.
Going to say Michael Floyd and Justin Blackmon were the two best wide receivers out of the draft, and they haven't exactly set the world on fire, and I don't think there's a wide receiver that is a rookie that is setting the world on fire. I do happen to like Alshon Jeffrey, but he's not even starting at this point, nor would I expect him to, barring an injury.
I'm going to stand corrected on Jacksonville. Jacksonville brought in Justin Blackmon, and they in the first round, and then they drafted four defensive players and a punter. Brian Anger, who's turning out to be a decent punter, they did not address the offensive line. Especially the year before when you ended up with Blaine Gabbert and Cecil Shorts. They brought in a guard 2 years ago, Will Rackley, and out of Lehigh. And Will Rackley doing? Let's find out, boys and girls.
All right.
tell you right now, NFL depth charts, Jacksonville. Okay. Complete depth charts, all positions. Okay. We have, it doesn't show the offensive line on this page. Interesting.
Yeah, you're going to Roto-World, aren't you?
Yes. I need to go to NFL.
Do you want to take a break and then pick that up when we get back?
You got it. That's actually, we're right on point for a break anyway. Do me a favor and do
okay.
the breaks while I get this together.
All right, no problem. All right, you're here with the JC Sports Lounge. We're going to come right back in just a couple of short minutes. And now a word from our sponsors.
Hello, everyone. Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house. And Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it. And this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea.
Greetings, this is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again. As I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific Time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio.
When we open our minds to the incredible, unlimited universe, we become participants in the active flow and infinite energy of life. We begin to live a much larger experience. We become free. In the magical universe, there are no coincidences and there are no accidents. You are here. You found Freedomizer Radio. See, the Power in You is about sharing the light of who you are, exploring different points of view, different perspectives on topics for better health for your mind and your body. Join Miss Cookie and me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 a.m. and Saturday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time and grow the light of who you are right here at Freedomizer Radio.
Join me, Valerie Ann, on the Truth Exposition Show at Freedomizer Radio in exposing the truth about FEMA camps, drone surveillance, martial law, the New World Order, our threatened freedoms and civil liberties, and for weekly news and current events. Mainstream media continues with its lies and deceit to fulfill the agenda of the New World Order. So please join me in exposing the truth, along with the lies and the deceptions that are being fed to the American people. The people of the United States have a voice, and your voice will be heard through Freedomizer Radio.
In today's economy, the ability to access data quickly can mean the difference between success and failure. Maximum Archive's MyDrive service lets you have access to your data from just about any device and pretty much anywhere. MyDrive makes sure that when it counts, you can get what you need, because failure's not an option. Sign up for MyDrive today at MaximumArchive.com. Use partner code Freedomizer at checkout and help fund the Freedomizer Radio Network. That's MaximumArchive.com.
Have a sports topic question? Call JC now at 347-324-3704.
JC is here. Proof is here as well. And I forgot I muted myself. I already started talking. So JC is here. Proof is here. Welcome to hour number two.
Hey, I did look up this guy, Will Rackley. And even though he was drafted two drafts ago, he's not on the team in 2012. So the problem that we have in Jacksonville is that they need to come up with some offensive line help, because apparently the offensive line help is not working that's there now. And that's been one of the things that we've talked about in the past as well, Proof, is that Jacksonville's offensive line, I think, is more of the problem than anything. But this guy Rackley is not even is not even a part of the team. And then when I clicked on his name at NFL.com, he has no stats. His last set of stats is that he played in 15 out of 16 games in 2011, and that's it.
So a rotating door of offensive line is not very conducive to the health of your team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Piecemealing is one thing, but to do that, you got to have players that are prominent in more than one position. A great example is the Pouncey brothers. They can both play center, they can both play left or right guard. That's unique. Then you have some guys, I can't think of any names off the top of my head, where they can play left tackle or left guard, or right tackle and right guard, or left tackle and right tackle, or left guard and right guard. But some people are piecemealed into just one position because that's all they know, and sometimes that's not good. But this guy, apparently nobody wants him.
Okay.
So Jacksonville, the popular decision was to get Blackmon. Now the question is, after the fact, do you think that was a good decision? I'm still going to say no.
Well, in my opinion, they could have taken an offensive line person, and everybody would have said, wait, you've been drafting offensive line people.
But they have.
And if one works out, it's justified. But, yeah, last year they did not. But the year before, or was it 2009 when they took Eugene Monroe? And in their first two picks, they took two offensive line in 2010.
Right. That was in 2009. They took
Even
Monroe
Britton
and,
was the other one, I think. I don't remember.
Even Britton, correct. You're absolutely right. And then in 2010... they drafted four defensive linemen. That's why the defensive side of the ball has gotten better, because they ended up addressing the defensive side of the ball with Alu and DeAnthony Smith. And then they came back in the third and fourth, in the fifth round, because they had a first and a third in 2010. They had two fifths and two sixths. So the two fifths were Larry Hart and Austin Lane. And then they came back and got a running back in Deji Kareem, and then Scott McGee, who is a kick returner. Okay, in 2011, yeah. Had a first, a third, two fourths, and a first, a third, two fourths, and a fifth, and got Blaine Gabbert, Bill Rackley, who's no longer with the team for the most part, wide receiver Cecil Shorts, and two DBs, and Chris Prusinski and Rod Isaac. Now you look at 2012. And you're looking at Justin Blackmon, Andre, and wide receiver Andre Branch, defensive end from Clemson, and Andre Branch is the starter, starting right defensive end. So he fit right on in where he needed to. Alu came in and started, and DeAnthony Smith is right behind him at defensive left tackle. So on the defensive side, the players, Darryl Smith, is turning out to be one heck of a player at strong side linebacker. So your players on the defensive side of the ball, the scouts know exactly what they're doing, and it's working on the defensive side of the ball. The problem is on the offensive side of the ball, they're putting the wrong pegs of the puzzle together. So that's where the problem is, and maybe they need to look at their staff and say, we need to bring in somebody that knows more about offensive players in development so that they can have that emphasis on the offensive side where they're going to feel comfortable that they bring in the right guy. Now, again, from a owner standpoint and a business standpoint, it's the best option. Because if you think about it, you know, to get defensive players in the early round, it's cheaper than getting an offensive skill set player. So he can quietly build a defensive team, and then when people point to him, he can say, "Look, I put this defensive team on together, and I've been spending my hard-earned cash," which he's doing, to employ the best players possible, and he's employing best players, but from a defensive side only, not necessarily from an offensive side. You wanted me to get Blackmon. I brought in Blackmon. Now you're blaming me because I brought him in. I mean, he's going to have every excuse pegged to move this team at this point. It's right in line for move. It's right in line. This reminds me of the Art Modell move. You don't want to build me a stadium. You're telling me who I should get, so he gets a couple of the players, knowing in his eye that they're not going to possibly pan out. And then what does he do? He builds a defense with some key players, and then he moves the team, and his first pick when he moved the team, Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
Ed Reed. You know, he built a monster. He already had pegs in place. But once he was able to unleash in Baltimore, because Baltimore ended up giving him what he wanted to take some financial burden off, he fielded a heck of a defensive squad to the point where they actually won a Super Bowl, knowing that they were going to fire their quarterback right after the season ended. That's when you know that you did the right thing from a business standpoint. I'm not sure if I don't think I would have been that popular. I don't think I would have made that decision like Modell did. But I, you know what? I commend him for standing up for what he believed in and doing what he did, because I don't think I would have had the guts to do it.
Hey, my wife is awake here, so I'm going to get to my. I have a fantasy football question I wanted to ask you.
Let's do it.
All right, I have another league outside of our DXL, and
correct,
I have RG3 and Tony Romo as my quarterbacks.
Alex Smith is
available. Should I dump it? Is now the time to sell on Romo and bring in Alex Smith? At this point, a year and a half ago, I'd have been laughed out of the. I would have been laughed off the phone if I would have asked that.
Alex Smith is playing against the Giants this week, correct?
Yeah. This isn't a keeper league or anything. This is just a freebie on NFL.com.
I know. Romo is playing against the Ravens. And then we have RG3, who's playing against the we're not sure if he's starting yet, but we know that the Redskins are playing against the Vikings.
Right.
Now is the time to swap Romo with Smith. And the reason why I'm saying this is because if I do recall last year in that NFC championship game when the Giants and the 49ers met, Alex Smith had a heck of an offensive performance in that game, even though he didn't have the targets he has this year. Now he has additional targets, and his stats, he's averaging about 300 yards a game and two touchdowns a game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he can move the ball against the Giants as long as they're not trying to pass only or run only. And they have enough running backs, especially with Brandon Jacobs coming back to play against his Giants team there. I think they have enough running backs and enough wide receiver mix and tight end mix where, you know, Vernon Davis is going to get them a lot of attention. Randy Moss, they have to respect. Manningham, they have to kind of respect. Then you have Gore and Hunter, that duo, along with Brandon Jacobs. I think the 49ers actually on offense can have their way with the Giants. So I think by picking up Smith, you should be able to get about 17 to 22 points.
Well, I'm looking long-term here, not just this week, but long-term. For the remainder of the year, I should say, which quarterback do you see? Do you see Romo picking up the pace here, or do you think that this is Romo's last year with the Cowboys and he's out the door?
I'm not sure if it's his last year with the Cowboys, because let's say the Cowboys go middle of the pack. Who do they pick up at quarterback? Let's say they're around 15 to 20. Who do they pick up at quarterback? Because we already know that Geno Smith is going to be gone. We already know that Barkley is going to be gone. And for the most part, Tyler Wilson should be gone. So what do? They reach into the second round and bring somebody to the first? Now, if they have a top 10 pick, they have the opportunity to possibly bring in another quarterback. So I don't necessarily
think
it's
going to be
Romo.
It's not like you're just going to flat-out cut Romo. I think that they let him start the season, unless he sucks again. But are these last few games with Romo any reason to worry, or is this just he just went through a rough patch and he could work himself out of the ditch?
But there was a lot of quarterbacks that have been going through rough patches this year. So I don't look at Romo any differently than I look at the rest of them. Let's look at Rodgers. Let's look at Drew Brees. Let's look at Phillip Rivers. Let's look at Jay Cutler. I mean, let's look at Michael Vick. Let's look at Ben Roethlisberger. And I'm not talking about the guys that are household names there, and they're actually not having a good start. So for them to pull the plug on Romo, I think Romo's part of the problem in Dallas, but I think the biggest problem in Dallas is not Romo. I think the biggest problem in Dallas is the coaching staff. There's no coaching. The coaching staff there does not hold anyone accountable to anything. So how can they get upset at Romo if they won't? Just like I had mentioned before last year, we had a conversation proof, and I said, if you don't teach the guy anything, then don't expect him to learn anything. And what they're saying is he should learn something based on the fact that he's been a starting quarterback and he should learn from some of these mistakes. Well, he was learning pretty good when Parcells had him underneath his realm. But as soon as you decided as an owner to become a head coach, and the hell with what the doggone head coach says about bringing in T.O. and doing other things, and then the head coach says, you know what, I'm out of here. Now you become the head coach by telling Jarrett what you want him to do. So what do you want? It's a circus. You wanted a circus. You got a circus. Now what do you want? It's a circus.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing that in Dallas that could tell me otherwise. That they're trying to put the best talent on the field, because they honestly it's the most talented, dysfunctional team in the history of modern sports outside of the Philadelphia 76ers when they had Dr. J and all those guys, when they had that dream team in Philadelphia for the NBA.
Okay.
It got to the point where they were so dysfunctional, they started fighting each other on the court during a playoff game. But they just thought that they can come in and we won. Well, it don't work that way. If you want to win, you got to play. And if you want to play, you got to practice. And if you don't want to practice, then don't expect to play or win. But these guys get, you know, no one is held accountable when the quarterback says, hey, let's go and practice, and Brian says, well, I don't want to practice today. Well, then why is he starting? Why don't you sit him and let him and explain to him you don't want to practice with the quarterback, then we need to sit on the bench as an accessory. Why can't we do that? Is it because of how much money he makes? So I think they send a clear wrong message there to that team, and everybody gets preferential treatment based on the amount of money they made, and it shouldn't be that way. You want respect, earn it. If you don't want respect, shut the heck up, do your job, and move on. So they don't get it. They really don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
But Jerry wanted a circus tent. He built Jerry's World, and now he has his circus as his main attraction. What else does he need? He can bring in 100,000 people to watch a Bon Jovi concert and still make money on the side. What a wonderful thought process.
It's the rich get richer.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to make money whether the Cowboys are suited up or not, because it's his stadium. It's his stadium. So he's going to make the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's parking, there's food and concessions, and he built it all. So, you know, his business standpoint is, I think he's turned into a little Al Davis. And it's just a matter of time before people start putting billboards next to his stadium saying they want him either dead or gone. It's coming. It is coming. Because it's just a matter of how many losing seasons can they withstand. And the more successful the Giants or the Eagles or the Redskins are, the more impatient the Cowboy fans will get.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to watch the circus, because then he's going to be upset because people are not respecting his team and blah, 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 blah. And guess what? It is what it is. Garbage in, garbage out. That's what you get.
So in other words, just to make sure I heard you right, now's a good time to sell on Romo?
Now's a great time to sell on Romo.
Okay.
I guess I'm just worried
that someone would pick him up after I dropped him.
And that's fine. Hopefully you play against them while they're having problems.
All right.
I mean.
All right, so I guess I'll take the sure thing with Alex Smith, and I can't believe I'm saying that.
You're going to be fine.
Okay. All right, I'm going to leave for, I don't know if it'll be just for a bit or if I'm out for the long haul here, but I'm going to have to jump here.
Hey, do you know how soon you got to jump?
What do you need?
You have to jump now, right now?
Do you need me for a minute or two, or what's up?
I wanted to ask a question about Matt Cassel.
Did you
see that hit? Did you see that hit he took?
Yeah, and then everybody was cheering.
That's where I was going. Do you think that was a good thing or a bad thing about them cheering for him, or do you think they were more cheering for the fact that they've been wanting this guy out of there for the last couple of years, but the team refuses to move forward with a new quarterback? I'm mixed emotion on this one.
Well, and the thing is, when you have fans begging for Brady Quinn, I don't know what to think about that.
I don't either. I thought it was when I saw the hit, I was like, wow, that's a good hit. And then afterwards, he didn't get up, and I was like, oh my gosh, hopefully he's okay. But then when they realized that he was not getting up, I mean, they actually went bonkers. I've never seen 70,000 fans so in tune to this, you know, good. Now we can move forward.
And the thing is that they weren't exactly getting blown out of that game. I mean, it was a 9-6 game.
Correct.
And I would take my chances with Matt Cassel in a close game rather than bring in Brady Quinn.
Now, this week, Brady Quinn is a starter with Ricky Stanzi as the backup.
Yeah, I'm not very impressed.
I'm not either. But I think the message that the Chiefs now want to relate to these people is we're going to give you Brady Quinn. Now, this could hurt them if Brady Quinn does well. If Brady Quinn manages the game very well, they have a problem. They have a serious problem because now their boy, they can't bring him back because he'll get booed off the field. Even when they introduced the players, Matt Castle got booed coming out of the doggone tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure where this goes, you know. It's pretty pathetic that we got to sit back and observe the quarterback play on some of these teams. And unfortunately, it's like a magnet. Some magnets go towards good player, good, you know, okay quarterback. Some magnets go towards, you know, Lucky Charms. And Kansas City, for a long time, have been in search of a quarterback. Cleveland Browns have been. Miami Dolphins have been. Jacksonville has been. I mean, there's a number of teams. Oakland has been. There's a number of teams where they need to find that quarterback so they can start focusing on the rest of the team.
Mm-hmm.
But it just bothered me to no end that they were able to boo this guy coming out and then clap for him, you know, when he got hurt. Now, to reiterate what I said about Dallas, they play the Ravens, and they follow the Ravens. They play the Panthers, which should be decent. But then they go the next three games. They have the Giants, the Falcons, and the Eagles. And then after that, they have the Browns and then the Redskins. Then they have the Eagles, the Bengals, the Steelers, the Saints, and then they end the season with the Redskins. They got a tough schedule coming, but everybody does this year. I mean, it's interesting the way things is working right now. But they have a really tough schedule. So I just wanted to point out there the reason why I said no to Romo.
Okay. No, that's cool.
All right. Well, it's 10:23 Pacific. 1:23. Am I right? 10 plus 3 is 13.
Yeah.
1:23 Eastern. And what we're going to do is we're going to take an early commercial break. And, Proof, thank you for coming on. And I will move forward right after the commercial break.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rob Nellen Live is a show exposing the fallacy of the right-left paradigm while promoting liberty and freedom. A plethora of guests will challenge the establishment, mainstream media, the New World Order, and hopefully you. Listen to Rob Nellen Live Sundays between 3 and 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on the Freedomizer Radio Network.
Are you one of the tens of people who are tired of seeing chemtrails? Fed up with the government geoengineering you every other day? Take a dose of La Mecha Wong Chemtrail Remover daily and you'll never worry about weather modification again. With great ingredients and quality vitamins from Mexico and China, like fluoride, barium, high fructose corn syrup, and colloidal mercury, your brain will be a virtual etch-a-sketch lickety-split. La Mecha Wong Chemtrail Remover. Wow, I don't even remember the tagline for this, so it must be great. From the people that brought you the roller coaster making game and who brought you the FEMA coloring books, it's the FEMA Camp Tycoon.
That sounds cool!
Here you will have over 800 concentration camps to choose from. Wow! You want Vegas? 29 Palms? Jacksonville? Start with Beech Grove, Indiana, and it's all yours. You'll learn how to get people on the red, the blue, and the yellow list. I want to be red!
I want to be blue. Buy more trains. Get HR 645 passed. But don't pay the Senate too much money. You'll need to buy gas chambers with that. Collect barcode readers, sell souvenirs, and hit the high score on collecting millions of American people, I mean, right-wing extremists. Anyway, coming soon, FEMA Camp Tycoon.
Hey there, Freedomizers. This is JC from the Sports Lounge. Join us for 3 hours on Saturdays as we take a break from politics to discuss sports at FreedomizerRadio.com. Come and join us each Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Pacific, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern.
Coming up on Recharge Radio this Monday, October 1st, 3 to 5 Pacific Time, I'm proud to announce our special guest, Tom Gimbel.
Hola amigos, it is I, Jose, again. When my sister Maria and I come to this country, we had no documentation. But thanks to my friend Chayo, he has started a new business called Chayo's Coyote and Document Services. So now I have a social security card, a birth certificate say I was born in Minnesota, and a driver's license from the state of Oklahoma. So if you too are in this country and need help with documentation, contact Chayo's Coyote and Document Services. Thank you.
Hey, Freedomist, join me, Proof Negative. Weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together. Right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Sports Lounge. This is JC, and what we're going to do is we're going to move forward, and we're going to be talking about, and I'm going to be talking about Red Zone Blitz, a look at the Freedom Division, and in Blazing Aces, a look at the Freedom Division and Blazing Aces. So for you guys that don't know, Blazing Aces is one of the leagues that I have along with Proof, and what we're going to be doing is we're going to identify what the teams look like at this point in the Liberty Division so that we can see how they stand up against what we had talked about at the beginning. So in the Liberty Division, we have the Kansas City Kings, who are 5-0, Baltimore Bolts, and the Seattle Brewmasters are 3-2, and the San Antonio Dragon Lords are 0-5. I also want to bring up the fact that the Kansas City Kings, the GM is Adam. The Baltimore Bolts GM is Mike. The Seattle Brewmasters GM is Josh. And the San Antonio Dragon Lords team is the GM of Thieves. Now, I'm going to go to station break for a quick second and possibly have someone on. Hold on for a sec, please.
Rob Nellen Live is a show exposing the fallacy of the right-left paradigm while promoting liberty and freedom. A plethora of guests will challenge the establishment, mainstream media, the New World Order, and hopefully you. Listen to Rob Nellen Live Sundays between 3 and 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on the Freedomizer Radio Network.
Hey guys, tune into the Heated Conversation hosted by me, Vicky. UFOs, GMOs, and chemtrails, oh my. We talk about anything and everything as long as it's hot. So call in and join the discussion live Thursday nights, 10:30 to midnight, and Friday nights, 9 to midnight Pacific. Only on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Hey, I'm back. This is JC. All right, what I want to point out is the fact that early on, we had the Kansas City Kings winning the division. We had the Baltimore Bolts in second place, the Seattle Brewmasters in third, and the San Antonio Dragon Lords in fourth. and it's kind of ironing out that way. In the division, Kansas City is 3-0, Baltimore is 2-1, Seattle is 1-2, and San Antonio is 0-3. First thing we want to look at is the Kansas City Kings. Again, the Kansas City Kings GM is Adam. And at quarterback, he has Drew Brees, followed by Alex Smith. And along with that, he's looking at Matt Hasselbeck, who is now up as a starter, who's now starting to develop points as well. So he has an okay wide receiver core. He probably needs to invest on a future in the offseason. At running back, Arian Foster's carrying a load for him, and Jonathan Stewart is over 100 points behind at the second-best running back. So he clearly needs to invest in his priorities into finding a running back this offseason. At wide receiver, he has Anquan Boldin and Lance Moore and Steve Smith from Carolina as his top three wide receivers, and he has Titus Young and Kevin Walter as his backup. So he may want to do the same thing as far as investing into some wide receiver help in the offseason. At tight end, he has Tony Gonzalez, the ageless wonder, and he definitely needs to invest in a tight end because he has Zach Miller from Seattle, who's not putting up any points at this point. So tight end is a look for him either through free agency or the offseason for the draft. At place kicker, he has Robbie Gould, and he has Justin Matlock from Carolina. Justin Matlock could be a future piece, not sure, but Robbie Gould is right now is his mainstay at the kicker. Defensive line, he has J.J. Watt, who I think personally is a stud, but then his scoring drops severely off with Glenn Dorsey and Nick Fairley. And then at linebacker, he has Ray Lewis, Derek Johnson, and Carlos Dansby as his three mainstays. And at defensive back, he has Kurt Coleman, Charles Godfrey, Nate Clements, and Vontae Davis as his four DBs. So from a defensive standpoint, he has a decent defensive team. From an offensive standpoint, his starters look good, but he has no support behind his starters. So I'm stunned that this team is actually 5-0 right now. I just think that he's going to catch that bug where he ends up losing two or three games. And it could end up like last year where it happened in the playoffs. So I'm just giving you your alert warning right now, Adam, that 5-0 is going to be short-lived. Okay, the next team on the list is the Baltimore Bolts, who is at 3-2. The Baltimore Bolts is looking at, we're looking at Mike, who is the GM of this team, and his team has gotten significantly better than last year up to this point. Now, you know, up to this point means that he actually has a winning record. So he's leading the way at quarterback with Andy Dalton and Andrew Luck, and his third quarterback is Tony Romo. And then his running back, he's looking at Chris Johnson and Michael Bush as his main running backs, and he has Lamar Miller as his third running back. So he probably needs to look at the future for the offseason for some running back help. At wide receiver, his number one is Marcus Colston, followed by Jeremy Curley, and then Austin Miles. I'm not going to sign off on this because I think Jeremy Curley is just a beneficiary of issues that's going on in New York. But from that point, he has Brandon Gibson and Sidney Rice, who is not exactly tearing up the way of the charts right now. So I see this being a piecemeal He also has AJ Jenkins from San Francisco, who hasn't had an opportunity to get any points up to this point. So he's inactive again. So I'm looking forward to seeing this team develop some wide receivers for the future and during the offseason. At tight end, I'm not impressed. Craig Stevens and JerMichael Finley are the top two. JerMichael Finley has been, I felt he was a disappointment. This year, the spiral is continuing down in the disappointment lane. So I don't see it there either. If I was Mike, I would make sure that I invest in tight end help during the offseason. At place kicker, yeah, Steven Goskowski and Justin Tucker, both of which are giving him decent points. He's going to have a problem trying to figure out which one to play from each week to week because they're going neck and neck in points. On the defensive side of the ball, at defensive line, he has Randy Stark leading the way, along with Cedric Ellis, Corey Leggett, Jose Umanora, and Ray Edwards. He might want to take a look in the future at bringing in some youth at the defensive line position. At linebacker, he's doing stellar. He has Sean Lee, Jolon Dunbar, and he also has Larry Foote, and they've been racking up points from the linebacker position. His backups are Clay Matthews and Sean Phillips. So I think he's doing okay there. At DB, he's looking at Cortland Finnegan, who's racking up points, along with Leotis McKelvin and Tracy Porter. And then his backups are Major Wright is also from Chicago. But his backups are Kerry Rhodes, Morris Claiborne. So he's got a good overall group of defensive players. And I actually like his defensive side of the line much better than I like his offensive side of the line. So, Mike, I'm looking at you at 3-2 in an 11-game or a 13-game league. I'm actually seeing you probably go .500 the rest of the way, which means that you'll probably make the playoffs. Okay, the next team in this group is the Seattle Brewmasters. The GM is Josh. The Seattle Brewmasters is a defending champ. They were the number 8 seed. They got hot and took it in the first year of this league last year. His problem is clear. At quarterback, he has Ben Roethlisberger, who's already been through his bye week. His quarterbacks are Byron Leftwich and Matt Moore for backup, so he clearly needs to invest in free agency and or the draft to get a quarterback in here. The next one he has is Frank Gore at running back, along with Maurice Jones-Drew. They're racking up good points for him. And then his backups, Sean Drawn and Joe McKnight, have been giving him quality points. And then he has Rashard Mendenhall and Belal Paul, who's also in the squad. It won't hurt him to bring in another running back. I'd like his running back core. At wide receiver, he is looking at his stud in Antonio Brown. And then there's a drop-off after that point in Donald Jones, Santana Moss, Dominic Hickson. And it goes clearly worse than that. So in the offseason, he needs to clearly look at the wide receiver position and start investing in free agency or the draft for new wide receivers. At tight end, he has Greg Olsen and Dennis Pitta, who are identical in points right now, leading his team, and he has Ben Watson as a backup. His place kickers are Dennis Prater and Steven Huschke, and both of them are running neck and neck, so he might end up in a situation where he second-guesses himself with the wrong player. On the defensive side of the ball, he has a defensive line. He has John Abraham and Jabal Sheard, both of which are the leading defensive line scores for his team. The problem is they're not scoring enough. So he's going to have to look at free agency on picking up some players there. At linebacker, he has some studs in Lance Briggs and Benell Ellerby and Robert Mathis, or excuse me, Lance Briggs and Benell Ellerby. Then he has a drop-off with DeMarcus Ware, Robert Mathis, and Lamar Woodley. At defensive back, he's looking at Thomas DeCoud and Bernard Pollard and Jeremiah Bell. And he also has Brandon Flowers as a defensive back core that's not bad, but he can use some help there as well. Overall, we're looking at the defending champs. I didn't expect him to do this well up to this point. He's 3-2, and I see him competing for a playoff spot. Not sure if he gets in or not. The final team in this division is the San Antonio Golden Dragon, and the San Antonio Golden Dragons GM is Steve Toomey. And what we're looking at for Steve Toomey, I wasn't supposed to say the last name, but Steve. And what we're looking at for Steve is at quarterback, he has Joe Flacco and Jake Locker. He definitely needs to look at investing in another quarterback. Jake Locker is starting to prove that he can't stay healthy. At running back, he has Kendall Hunter as his top running back, who has put out some points, but it also because of the fact that he does a lot of special teams help work. And then his backups are Mike Goodson and Danny Woodhead. So he clearly in the offseason needs to invest in running back in a free agency and then look at the draft again for another running back. As wide receiver, he's looking at Torrey Smith as his top wide receiver. And then it drops clearly from there to Jeremy Maclin and Joe Adams as the next, and Mike Williams from Tampa Bay as the next set. So he needs to look at investing in wide receivers. From the tight end standpoint, he has Jermaine Gresham, and not much help after that, so he definitely needs to invest in the tight end group. And at place kicker, he has Connor Barth, and he has Garrett Hartley. So from this point, he needs to look at figuring out which one is going to be the guy because they're very close in points. On the defensive side of the ball, from a name standpoint, his defensive line, he has Geno Atkins, Gerald McCoy, Tyson Jackson, and Matt Shaughnessy. They're decent, but they're not necessarily scoring the type of points that this league requires you to score. Also, he got hurt with Brian Cushing getting hurt. Mason Foster, Levante David is also on this team, and they actually have been doing very well for him. And now at DB, he has Devin McCourty, Patrick Peterson, and Morgan Burnett. So on the defensive side, he has decent players, especially at the linebacker and the DB positions. He probably want to look at investing in some defensive line help to give him a boost on the defensive side of the ball. But also, he clearly needs to start focusing on which players are free agents so that he can start trying to see if he can pick one or two of them up and then go from there. So in the end, I'm looking at the Kansas City Kings 1, the Baltimore Bolts 2, the Seattle Brewmasters 3, and the San Antonio Dragonlords 4. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and take a station break and then come right back to do the other division in Lazy Nathan.
Gossett here from Gorilla Radio, asking you guys to tune in Monday and Wednesday night after the Proof Negative show.
Right here on Freedomizer Radio, the only network on the web that freedomizes your freedom. And please, people, do not believe the hype. We are not both cynics on Guerrilla Radio.
Wait, you're the cynical one, not me. I'm the realist here. Come on, Cam, you know everybody loves you, even though you're the biggest cynic out there.
Hey, now, Austin, I was talking about you.
Wait, no, no, we're talking about you. You're the cynical one.
I'm not
realist.
The cynical one. You're the cynical one. Come on. Everybody knows you're cynical.
When we open our minds to the incredible, unlimited universe, we become participants in the active flow and infinite energy of life. We begin to live a much larger experience. We become free. In the magical universe, there are no coincidences and there are no accidents. You are here. You found Freedomizer Radio. See, the power in you is about sharing the light of who you are, exploring different points of view, different perspectives on topics for better health for your mind and your body. Join Miss Cookie and me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 a.m. and Saturday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time and grow the light of who you are right here at Freedomizer Radio.
Okay, welcome back. This is JC, and we are at the Sports Lounge. The next division that we're going to do in Blazing Aces is the Freedom Division. In this division, we actually have a three-way fight for first place. But there's the Senate, there's the Salt Lake City Devil Dogs, which the GM is Shane. And then the Norfolk Enchants, the GM is Mike. The Akron Bulldogs, the GM is Jim. And then the Washington Tyranny, the GM is Sean. The Devil Dogs are 3-2. Norfolk and Akron are 2-3. And Washington is 0-5. First one we're going to take a look at is the Salt Lake City Devil Dogs. And what we have here with Shane Steen at quarterback, he has Sam Bradford and Josh Freeman. He's in a situation where they're fairly close in points. He could possibly look at a quarterback in the offseason. Both of these quarterbacks in time should get better, but right now I would look at the free agency and see if there's a quarterback out there that I might want to snag and look at the future by looking at the upcoming Blazing Aces draft for 2013. At running back, he's stacked. He has Andre Brown, Steven Jackson, Darren McFadden, and Darren Sproles as his running backs. He also has Leon Washington, who's racking the points in special teams from a running back position. For the most part, he's got some fairly decent pieces. He has Daryl Richardson, the backup Steven Jackson. He has J.K. Bell in Detroit because of the problems that Detroit's having at the running back position. He actually has a good core group of running backs. The problem is which one to play from one week to the next. At wide receiver, Shane is looking at Brandon Marshall as a clear-cut stud. And then from that point, he has Kevin Ogletree, Alshon Jeffrey, Josh Gordon, Aurelius Ben. So he might want to look at bringing in another wide receiver in the offseason through free agency and or the draft. At tight end, Shane is looking at Vernon Davis. And then there is a major drop at that point. Robert Hausler and Lance Kendrick, they're up-and-comers. And they haven't gravitated to the principle behind the game yet. So he might want to look at, I probably would not, but he probably would might want to look at the tight end position as a piece to shore up to add to the talent that he currently has. At place kicker, Blair Walsh is the clear-cut runner for this team, along with Sean Streetham, who actually missed the field goal last night. And then he also has Dan Bailey. At defensive line, He has Jason Pierre-Paul and Mario Williams. Jason Pierre-Paul, as good of a player as he is, he's not the point getter. That he's one of those guys that takes up a lot of space and then allows other people to get to the quarterback and do the things where the points are really at. Akeem Ayers from Tennessee and James Laurinaitis from St. Louis is his top two linebackers. He has Aaron Henderson, and he also has Rolando McClain and Koamiti, who are able backups, so he's very strong at linebacker. And then at defensive back, he has Kerry Williams and Michael Griffin, which I really like. And then he has Troy Polamalu and Dante Whitner as his backups at the defensive back position. I would consider looking at, in the offseason, at getting one or two defensive backs. So the next team is Norfolk and Chance. Again, the GM is Mike. And with Norfolk, what he's looking at is at quarterback. Where are you, Mike? At quarterback, he's looking at Robert Griffin III, Michael Vick, and Jay Cutler. So he actually has a good core group of quarterbacks. He has current as well, and he also has Kyle Orton as a backup to Romo. So he's looking at current, and he also has the future in Robert Griffin III, who's actually his top quarterback at this time. At running back, this is where the concern's at. He has Daniel Thomas as the top running back, and he's not getting enough points there. He also has Ronnie Hillman and Peyton Hillis. And Noshawn Moreno. So he definitely needs to address the running back position in the during the offseason. At wide receiver, his two studs are Josh Cribbs and Calvin Johnson. I never thought I would hear the day that I would be saying that Josh Cribbs has more points than Calvin Johnson. But it's true. And he has clearly no help from that point forward, so he has to play to both of them. He has to play those two because there's nobody else there, basically. So he needs to address the wide receiver position without hate during the offseason. At tight end, he's looking at Scott Chandler and Dante Rosario. I would look at this position with the possibility of bringing in a tight end through free agency or through the draft. He has Mason Crosby as his kicker. He needs to look at bringing in another kicker. He has Billy Cundiff as the other one, but Billy Cundiff just got sacked on his team. So he only has one clear-cut kicker at this point. At defensive line, he has Elvis Dumervil, and which is not scoring a heck of a lot of points like he used to. And then everybody else is clear-cut challenges for him. He has Richard Seymour, Jared Allen, and Kyle Vandenbosch, the next four to step up, and they have less than half the points each than Elvis Dumervil did. At linebacker, he's looking okay. He has Nick Barnett, Michael Boley, and Kevin Burnett. It's clear that he needs to bring in possibly one linebacker during the offseason so that he can offset the 3-year contracts remaining on all three of his linebackers. So we have to probably move somebody to a 4-year deal during the offseason. At DB, he has Jason McCourty. I love his DBs. He has Antoine Winfield, LaRon Landry, and Eric Weddle, and all four are doing very well. So I commend him for his DB core. It's clear that his defensive line, his wide receiver, and his running backs are his number one attention, followed by his tight end, place kicker, and the possibility of looking at additional help wherever he can get it. But overall, I like his team, and I'm actually excited that he's doing very well at this point, even though it's a 2-3 record. The next GM is Jim. His team is the Akron Bulldogs. At quarterback, he has Brandon Whedon and Mark Sanchez. which is interesting because just like Shane's team with the Devil Dogs, he has okay quarterbacks, but he probably wants to look in the offseason at the quarterback position to try to bring in either that future guy or somebody that could possibly outduel these two guys. At running back, he's relying on Willis McGahee, very heavy, and a little bit of Donald Brown, who is now out for the next at least 2 to 3 or 4 weeks. So he's in a situation where he needs to really address the running back position. The next set of guys down on this team is Mike Tolbert, followed by Toby Gerhart. They're not getting the points to help support this team. This is where I see this team start to fall a little bit. At the wide receiver position, I love Roddy White and Victor Cruz. He also has a little bit of Michael Crabtree and Antonio Holmes and Brandon LaFell and Robert Meacham to salt into this, along with Jacoby Jones. He does need to start looking at some continuity amongst his wide receiver core. Hopefully he can piecemeal it out, but the wide receiver core at this point seems to be the strongest of the three I just talked about. He also has at tight end, he has Dallas Clark and Joel Dreesen. It's clear it's time to look for a tight end. It's just as bad as his running back core. And I would definitely be on the lookout for whatever tight ends that come off the board in during free agency that could outdo the two of these guys right now. At the place kicker position, he's looking at Rob Baronas and Ryan Lindell. And it's clear that Rob Baronas is the front runner of the two at this point. He's also looking on the defensive side of the ball. He's looking at defensive line. He has Jason Babin. Jason Babin, even though he's a decent player in the NFL, he's not a fantasy stat maker. So he's in a situation where he needs to focus on the defensive line position, get some players in that can actually give him some points and from a defensive line standpoint. At the linebacker position, Pat Angerer, who is a stat monster, is still out. And he's focused with Patrick Willis and Tamba Ali. He does need some depth there. I would probably look at some depth at this point. And then at the defensive back position, I like the Tremont Williams pick that he has. And his backups are Adrian Wilson, Joe Hayden, and Nnamdi Asamoah. And he does need a little bit, he needs a more steady person in that position. Okay, the last team in this Freedom Division is the Washington Tyranny. The Washington Tyranny is GM'd by Sean, and I'm concerned because this team, I thought, had a lot better shot than what it ended up having right now. At the quarterback position, he has Phillip Rivers. That's all he has. He has Tim Tebow as the second best, but Tim Tebow as a season doesn't even have 8 points. Phillip Rivers almost has 100. He has 86. So he needs to focus on it's clear he needs to focus on the QB position without question. His running back, he has Alfred Morris, nice pickup. He has Darius Renard from Tennessee, another nice pickup. But he clearly needs to focus on this position. Fred Jackson is not doing it for him. Felix Jones is not doing it for him. Beanie Wells is not doing it for him. Jonathan Dwyer is not doing it for him. At wide receiver, John is looking at Andre Johnson and Brandon Lloyd as his top two wide receivers. He has a little bit of Cecil Shorts, Leonard Hankerson, and Donnie Avery to add to this crew during the offseason. If there's some decent wide receivers out there, I would probably jump on one of them and possibly draft one during the draft. At tight end position, he's looking at Brandon Myers. He's also looking at Kellen Davis. And he also has Aaron Hernandez. Aaron Hernandez has been out. He's questionable this week. I'm not sure if I play him this week, but Aaron Hernandez coming back is a motivational sign that we may see this team start do well, because he has a lot of pieces where they're injured all the time. And they've kind of been injured during the same time frame. So that hurts, especially like a Fred Jackson and your Aaron Hernandez's, and you know, and then you got Andre Johnson, who's not particularly doing well, your Beanie Wells. Jonathan Dwyer is out. So he's in situations where he has, you know, key players that should be giving him points are not giving him enough points because they're getting hurt. They're getting nicked up from one to the other. His place kickers, he has David Akers and Jay Seeley, good combo. On the defensive side of the ball, he has Justin Smith as his top defensive lineman, along with Tommy Kelly. He needs to find someone that can give him better points than what they can do, because they're basically stopgap holders that allow other players to come in and get the points that he much so needs. He has, at linebacker, he has Lennon Perez and Wesley Woodyard. They're giving him good set points at the linebacker position. John Beeson and Dante Hightower and Takeo Spikes are his backups, nice backups to have. And then at the DB position, he has a stud in Altram Verner from Tennessee. He also has decent backup help in Cam Chancellor, Craig Dahl, DeJuan Landry, and TJ Ward. Love his DB group back here. Love it. He also has Stephon Gilmore from Buffalo. So it's very nice to have someone like Stephon Gilmore, who just recently got drafted, to be your, you know, he has decent points, and he's your sixth best DB. That's a nice core of DBs you have there, Sean. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and take a break now that we've gotten to this point, and we'll be back with JC in the Sports Lounge.
When we open our minds to the incredible, unlimited universe, we become participants in the active flow and infinite energy of life. We begin to live a much larger experience. We become free. In the magical universe, there are no coincidences and there are no accidents. You are here. You found Freedomizer Radio. See, the Power in You is about sharing the light of who you are, exploring different points of view, different perspectives on topics for better health for your mind and your body. Join Miss Cookie and me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 a.m. and Saturday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, and grow the light of who you are right here at Freedomizer Radio.
Hey, cruise on over to the Whiskey A Go-Go, Freedomizer's late-night comedy show on Wednesday nights from 10:30 to midnight Pacific Time. Hosted by me, Val Milano, and my co-host, Crazy Mars. We are seeking talent in comedy and music. The music we are looking for is classic rock, acid rock, hard rock, rap, pop, and blues. In comedy, we want any and all comedy skits, whether you call in live or submit by MP3. Be as creative as you want. Please submit your work at our fan page on Facebook at The Whiskey A Go-Go. So come, lift your spirits, and get away from all the doom and gloom. Warning, it's raw, it's dangerous, and we will be at our best at making fun of you. No PC allowed. I'm stalking you. You never know who and when I will swoop on the air, unless you're there. So that's Wednesday night, 10:30 to midnight Pacific Time, right here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Whiskey A Go-Go! Whoa, put the brakes on. Did you catch all that? Too much coffee. Freedomizer is so addicting.
Oh, yeah, baby. You know what time it is? It's time to get your freak on with your host, Max Casey, right here on the Black Market Liberty Show, Mondays at 7 Central.
Hey, this is JC, and welcome back to the Sports Lounge. Next division I'm going to talk about in Blazing Aces is going to be the Patriot Division. And in the Patriot Division, we have the Atlanta Hellhounds. We have the Lincoln Huskers. The Atlanta Hellhounds GM is Carl. The Lincoln Huskers, the Atlanta Hellhounds and the Lincoln Huskers are both 4-1. The Lincoln Huskers GMs are Scott and Ryan. The San Diego Lollygaggers are two and three, and their GM is Jared. And the Santa Barbara Samurai is also 2-3, and their GM is Rob. So the first one we're going to talk about is the Atlanta Hellhounds at 4-1. Carl's team at quarterback has Eli Manning and Carson Palmer. He has a good starter. He has a good backup when he needs the backup. And if I was Carl, I would start looking at in the offseason, or probably in the draft, I would look at a future quarterback so that I can get him. By the time Eli Manning is ready to come off the board, this guy can now take over. And Carson Palmer is your stopgap. Yeah. At running back, Carl has Michael Turner, C.J. Spiller, Ahmad Bradshaw, Cedric Benson, Jackie Battle. He has some decent running back core there. At wide receiver, he's looking at A.J. Green, Brian Hartline, Reggie Wayne, Mike Wallace, and then you sprinkle in a little Golden Tate. His wide receiver core is not that bad either for the most part. At tight end, Carl has Kyle Rudolph and Mercedes Lewis. And in the offseason, I would probably look at coming up with a third tight end, either through free agency or the draft. At place kicker, it's clear that Shane Graham is the starter. Dan Carpenter is your backup. Randy Bullock from Houston, he is injured reserve. So he'll probably be back next year, and he could be your next guy down the line. On the defensive side of the ball, at defensive line, your top guy is Derek Morgan. And then you have Cameron Wake, along with Lamar Houston, as your two most viable backups at this point. At linebacker, this is the cream of your defensive side of the ball. You have Russell Allen, Donald Butler, Justin Durant, Chad Greenway, Dequell Jackson. And you can technically start every one of those guys and still be happy. It doesn't matter which one for the most part. At DB, you have a solid DB core with Mark Barron, Jarris Byrd, and Quentin McHale. You also have Louis Delmas, but he is questionable. He's been hurt. So your DBs are not that bad. I love your linebackers. Your linemen, I think they're okay, but I think in the offseason you can find someone that can probably outpoint, from a fantasy standpoint, outproduce these guys. But overall, I think this team, barring injury, is a front runner in the playoffs. You have any key injuries, it's going to take this team down in a hurry. Your next team, is the Lincoln Huskers. This will be Scott and Ryan's team. The Lincoln Huskers actually is a good story here because this was a team that started off. This team had the first pick in the draft or the second pick in the draft. And what we have is at quarterback, have Matt Ryan and Russell Wilson. I would probably try to, in the offseason, invest into a third quarterback so that I had some flow there. I like the quarterback scenario, but Russell Wilson and Matt Flynn are too close to call. So I would make sure that if Matt Flynn took over, I had a backup that was a starter. Okay, at running back, this is where you're really excelling. You have Jamaal Charles, Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis, Trent Richardson. Those are your three studs. At backup, you have Isaac Redman and D'Angelo Williams. Overall, your running backs, I love your running backs. At wide receiver, your top two are Dwayne Bowe and Demaryius Thomas. Nice pair of wide receivers. Devon Best and Nate Burleson are your backups. This is a position during the offseason I will look at through free agency or the draft. At tight end, Your tight ends, you're looking at Jacob Tammy and Anthony Fasano as your top two tight ends. Kobe Fleener is your up-and-coming guy. I would probably focus on a tight end during the free agency to get someone that might be out there that is able to outpoint the current group as a whole to be my next leader down the line until Kobe Fleener takes over. On place kicker, Mike Nugent's your starter. Josh Kobe's your backup. Nice duo. Defensive side of the ball, your defensive line, you're looking at Greg Hardy and Ndamukong Suh, decent defensive players in their own right. Again, they're not scoring as much as you would expect them to because they're space fillers. At linebacker, I like your linebackers. You have David Harris, you have Curtis Lofton, Craig Robertson, and KJ Wright. Very good group of linebackers. And then you have Will Witherspoon and Michael Kendrick as your backups. At defensive back, you have Roman Harper and Kareem Jackson. Beautiful duo of DBs there. Your backups of Eric Berry and Patrick Chung are not bad either. Overall, nice group. Going back to the Atlanta Hellhounds, everything goes well. You'll be in the playoffs with no problems. Lincoln Huskers, if you continue on the pace that you're on right now, barring injuries at key positions, you'll also be in the playoffs. Next team to look at is the San Diego Lollygaggers. This is Jared's team. The San Diego Lollygaggers, here goes a team that's at a crossroads, not sure which direction it's going, but at quarterback, there's Cam Newton, and backup is Ryan Tannehill, two up-and-coming guys, and if things work out, he'll have these guys for quite some time. Once everything starts to pan out, he probably wants to look at investing in a quarterback of the future in the next year or two. At running back, there's Adrian Peterson and David Wilson and Sean Green and Brandon Bolden. Overall, it's a decent core group of running backs. At wide receiver, this is where the problem lies. There's Larry Fitzgerald, and then there's a major drop-off. We get T.Y. Hilton, an up-and-coming guy. We have Hakeem Nicks, who can't stay on the field right now. Emmanuel Sanders, third wide receiver in Pittsburgh. So this is an area that I would have to pay attention to at this point. At tight end, you're looking at Jared Cook, and then you have Fred Davis, who has tilted off the mark. He started off pretty decent for Washington, and since then has tilted. So you want to look at that closely, and if it continues to go to the point where Jared Cook has 2-1 points over Fred Davis, you need to start looking at tight end during the offseason. Your place kickers are fairly close in Greg Zuerlein and Lawrence Tyne. You're going to have to figure out which one you want to hang on to because it looks like you might lose the other because they both have scored quite a bit of points. On the defensive side of the ball, same thing. We have Kalai Campbell and Will Smith, decent players. They're not making enough fantasy points for you at this point. We have James at linebacker. We have DeAndre Levy, Jared Mayo, and Stephen Nicholas, along with DJ Smith and Phillip Wheeler. Your linebacker core is solid. DB core, I like your DB core. You have Tyvon Branch, Michael Hove, Daniel Manning, and Harrison Smith. I love your DB core overall. Now, you're 2-3, and with this team, I kind of expected you to be a little bit better than 2-3. However, you're in a division where there's two teams, 4-1, so I can understand why you're 2-3 up to that point. Also, in this division, we have the Santa Barbara Samurai and Ross team. We're looking at a quarterback. There's Matt Schaub, Matt Castle, Colin Kaepernick. He clearly needs to start looking at the quarterback position during the offseason to bring in a viable person at the quarterback position. At running back, he has Stephen Ridley. He has Stephen Ridley along with Ryan Matthews and Matt Forte. Ryan Matthews and Matt Forte, if they start picking up the pace now, this team could be something to reckon with coming out of that 2 and 3 position. So I see good things coming down the line on this one here. This team also had Ryan Williams, who's now on injured reserve, the second Cardinal running back to be put on injured reserve. Unbelievable. But I see if those two come back, then I see this team being very difficult to deal with. At wide receiver is Percy Harvin, who I think is the NFL most valuable player at this point outside of the quarterback position. And his backups are DeSean Jackson and Kendall Wright. He probably wants to address this position during the offseason. There's not much to address for the most part, but I probably would want to address this position. At tight end, there's Jimmy Graham and Brandon Pettigrew and Jordan Cameron, the decent tight end crew. At place kicker, Matt Bryan is your starter. Ryan Succop is your backup. On the defensive side of the ball, you have Gerald Casey and you have Charles Johnson at defensive line. And along with that, you have Ryan Kerrigan, D'Amico Ryan, and Sean Witherspoon as your deep as your linebackers. And then you also have Atari Bigby and Earl Thomas as your DBs with Kenny Phillips, who recently got hurt and now he's out. So if your injuries can stop taking a toll, this team here could make a run for the next spot in the playoffs. Now what we're looking at also is in the division, Atlanta Hellhounds and Lincoln Huskers both are 2-1, and San Diego Lollygaggers and Santa Barbara Samurai are 1-2. Okay, the next and the final division is the United Division, and in this division we have the Houston Cycles who are 4-1, and then we have a three-way tie with Albuquerque Lobos, Memphis Reapers, and the New York Jazz, who are 2-3. So Houston is the GM is Ricky. Albuquerque Lobos is Nick. Memphis Reapers GM is Gene. And the New York Jazz GM is myself. Okay, the first one I'll look at is the Houston Cycles. Houston Cycles, again, the GM is Ricky. And at quarterback, he's getting lots of points. Unfortunately, he can only pick one. That'd be Tom Brady or Ryan Fitzpatrick. At running back, he has Ray Rice, and then he has nothing else. He desperately needs to look in the offseason at a running back. If Ray Rice goes down, he is screwed. At wide receiver, he's looking at Andre Roberts, Julio Jones, and Jordy Nelson. He needs to start focusing on wide receivers for this team as well, because he's definitely going to need a bigger stable than just three. At tight end, there's Rob Gronkowski, and for some reason, Ed Dixon has tailed off. So he needs to focus on the tight end position, because Ed Dixon so far this season has only scored 6 points. That's not good. At place kicker, Ricky has Sebastian Janikowski and nothing else. So place kicker needs to be a position to look at. On the defensive side of the ball, he has Duane Edwards, Julius Peppers, Justin Tuck, Cameron Wembley. Good players in their own right. Needs to start focusing on who might be out there that can score more points than these guys can from a defensive line standpoint. Also, at linebacker, he has Bobby Wagner from Seattle, and that's it. So he needs to focus on the linebacker position. I like his DB position with Dante Robinson, Nate Allen, and Ed Reed. He has three players that are actually scoring decent points for him there. On the other hand, he could use an up-and-coming guy at the DB position, so I wouldn't discard this position. Next team I'm going to talk about is the Albuquerque Lobos. The Albuquerque Lobos GM is Nick. At quarterback, he has Matthew Stafford. Thank goodness he has Sean Hill so for the backup. But he definitely needs to invest in a quarterback during the offseason with no other quarterback basically scoring for him at this point. He does have Nick Foles in case there's something that happens with Michael Vick. At running back, he has LeSean McCoy and DeMarco Murray and Pierre Thomas. He has a nice core group of running backs there. At wide receiver, he has Eric Decker, Nate Washington, Vincent Jackson, and Brandon Tate. Honestly, I think the wide receiver core is okay, but I would definitely look at the offseason and the draft at wide receiver position. At the tight end position, this is where he's hurting. He has Dwayne Allen as the top tight end out of his core group, but he also has Antonio Gates in his core group. But Dwayne Allen has actually scored more fantasy points than Antonio Gates. I would look at tight end position very, very hard. As place kickers, he's in a situation where he could play the wrong one from one week to the next. You have Jason Hansen and Phil Dawson. They're running neck and neck. So the hard part is which one should he start? On the defensive side of the ball, at the defensive line position, he has Cameron Jordan, and his backup is Darnell Dockett and Israel Adonijie. I like Cameron Jordan. At the linebacker position, he has James Anderson, London Fletcher, Paul Posluszki. I like the trio. He has Kelvin Shepherd as a backup. And then the DB position, I really like his DB position with D'Angelo Hall, Charles Tillman, Ladarius Webb, and George Wilson. So overall, I actually like this team. Even though it's 2-3, I like this team a lot. Hey, the next team in line is the Memphis Reapers. The Memphis Reapers GM is Gene. And what Gene has done at the quarterback position, he has Peyton Manning. His backup is Kevin Cobb, and then he has Brady Quinn. Right, I'm going on record right now saying that you have three. This is a position of fragility, and you definitely have to focus on a quarterback during the offseason and during the draft when we have our draft. The running back position, you have Marshawn Lynch and Reggie Bush, and Marcus Thigpen has been also giving you points as well. It wouldn't hurt to add someone to this stable of running backs. At the wide receiver position, this is a position where I think you have key need. Your top two is Wes Welker and James Jones. And then you have Pierre Garçon and Dez Bryant. Garçon got hurt and hasn't played in a while. Dez Bryant has been underachieving. So I would definitely look at the wide receiver position during the offseason. At tight end, you have Heath Miller and Jason Witten and Tony Moyarki. You may want to look at the tight end position. It's not a pressing need like the wide receiver position is, but it's a need, or like the quarterback position is, but it's a need in general. At the place kicker position, you have a three-way fight with Nick Folt, Nate Kading, and Adam Vinatieri. All three of them are within 2 points of one another. So you definitely have a hard decision to make from one week to the next. on the defensive side of the ball, your top defensive lineman is Haloti Ngata. I like Haloti Ngata. And then you have, for his backup, you have Jesse Chandler and Robert Quinn, very decent backups, with Vince Warfork right behind them and Chris Clemens. At your linebacker position, you have three studs in Navarro Bowman, Gerald Freeman, and Darrell Washington, and you have Brian Urlacher as a viable, very viable backup. At the DB position, you have William Moore, Antrell Rolle, Charles Woodson, Antoine Bethea, Richard Wilson, and Darrell Revis. With Darrell Revis on injured reserve and Richard Marshall out, you have plenty of pickings to choose from. And I'm actually stunned that you've only won two games. I think, honestly, that this team should have won probably more than just two games, especially with Peyton Manning at the helm. And then the final team I want to talk about is the New York Jazz. This would be my team. At quarterback, I have Aaron Rodgers with Christian Ponder and Blaine Gabbert. And depending on how Blaine Gabbert's process is, I might want to start looking at a viable QB during free agency and or the draft. At the running back position, I have Doug Martin, Jacquez Rogers, and then the backups look to be Mikel LeShour, Kevin Smith, Ben Tate, and Ronnie Brown. I definitely need to focus on the running back position during the offseason. At the wide receiver position, I have the stud in Randall Cobb and Danny Amendola from a point standpoint, and I have Devin Hester. And then I also have Malcolm Floyd and Steve Johnson, who have been giving me decent points, but it wouldn't hurt to add someone to this group. At the tight end position, I have Martellus Bennett, Brent Celek, and Owen Daniels, who have been scoring decent for me at this point. And then at place kicker, I have Alex Henry, no other place kicker I have. So I need to really focus on the place kicker position here and bring somebody in before the bye week. On the defensive side of the board, I have Atiba Rubin and Kyle Williams. I definitely need to focus on looking at someone to bring in at the defensive line position. At the linebacker position, I have A.J. Hawk, Luke Kuechly, and Lawrence Timmons as my three studs, along with Stephen Tulloch. It's an okay linebacker position. And at the DB position, I have Jimmy Smith and Prince Amukamara. And that's a porous DB position at best, and I definitely need to address it during the offseason. So overall, what I'm looking at is Houston Cycles making the playoffs, and I'll give you the playoff breakdown right now. Freedom and Liberty division actually meet each other, and then the Patriots and United divisions actually meet each other. So we have the Freedom and Liberty divisions meeting. So we have number one, Kansas City Kings. Number two, Salt Lake City Devil Dogs, the way it stands today. Number three would be the Baltimore Bolts. Number four would be the Seattle Brewmasters. And then just out would be the Norfolk Enchant and Akron Bulldogs. So there's a six-way run for four positions. In the Patriot United group, we have number one, we have Atlanta Hellhounds, Houston Cycles, number two, Lincoln Huskers, number three at 4-1. And then from there, we have San Diego Lollygaggers, Santa Barbara Samurai, Albuquerque Lobos, Memphis Reapers, and New York Jazz, all at 2-3, fighting for that fourth and final spot. That's the way it appears up to this point. And it should be a good run overall. We'll see as time goes by. What we're going to do is we're going to take a station break. And then after the station break, we're going to go ahead and talk more about the Chiefs. I'll talk more about the NFL top five players by position and the Chiefs fan that cheered the and possibly bring back the Chiefs fans cheering that Matt Castle gets knocked out of the game.
Hey, Freedomizers, Val Villano here. I am proud to announce the premiere of Recharge Radio, my new show right here on Freedomizer. It's Monday through Thursday from 3 to 5 Pacific. Objective journalism rising against the New World Order. Being a New World Order analyst for many years, my expertise on tactics and master plan implementation carried out by the elitists who govern our world, I base my theories on objective probability analysis on both current and past events to bring a new light of understanding in the world in which we live. I believe I have a dynamic news coverage with intel information from insiders revealing their strategy to the public to help you prepare. Along with my superior guest interviews, I also believe that we will be taking a commanding lead in quality journalism to the airwaves right here on Freedomizer, Monday through Thursday, 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Objective journalism rising against the New World Order.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants, I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea.
Hey, welcome back to the Sports Lounge. This is JC. And the final topic is going to be the top five by position for your fantasy choosing. We're going to start off with the defensive rankings and for week six. And what I have at number five is the Baltimore Ravens. I think they're going to do very well against the Cowboys. At number four, I have the Arizona Cardinals. So if you have the Arizona Cardinals on your in your lineup or on your team, place them in your lineup against the Bills. Number three, I have the San Francisco 49ers against the Giants. At number two, I have the Atlanta Falcons against the Raiders. And at number one, I had the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Titans. Now, the Titans beat the Steelers 26-23, but I'm just letting you know that I did have the Steelers against the Titans. Okay, top place kickers. At number five, Jason Hanton against the Eagles. Matt Prater at number four against the Chargers. David Akers, number three against the Giants. Greg Zuerlein against the Dolphins at number two. And at number one, I have Matt Bryant against the Raiders. So we have two Raiders, so two Falcons so far in that group. Okay, now at this point, I'm going to go to the tight end ranking. At number five, I have Owen Daniels against the Packers. At number four, I have Antonio Gates against the Chargers. At number three, I have Rob Gronkowski against the Seahawks. Number two, I have Vernon Davis against the Giants. And at number one, I have Tony Gonzalez against the Raiders. From a wide receiver standpoint, at number five, I have Roddy White against the Raiders. At number four, I have Julio Jones against the Raiders. At number three, I have Calvin Johnson against the Eagles. At number two, I have A.J. Green against the Browns. And at number one, I have Percy Harvin against the Redskins. From a running back standpoint, at number five, I have Trent Richardson against the Bengals. At number four, I have Marshawn Lynch against the Patriots. At number three, I have LeSean McCoy against the Lions. At number two, I have Jamaal Charles against the Buccaneers. And at number one, I have Arian Foster against the Packers. And finally, at quarterback, my top five quarterbacks are, number five is Michael Vick against the Lions. Number four is Robert Griffin III against the Vikings, if he plays. Number three, I have Tom Brady against the Seahawks. Number two, I have Aaron Rodgers against the Texans. And number one, I have Matt Ryan against the Raiders. At the defensive ranking, my honorable mentions, my three honorable mentions are the Dallas Cowboys against the Ravens, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Chiefs, the Cincinnati Bengals against the Browns. My honorable mention place kickers are Justin Tucker against the Cowboys, Shane Graham against the Packers, Sebastian Janikowski against the Falcons. My honorable mention tight ends are Brandon Pettigrew against the Eagles, Jason Witten against the Ravens, Fred Davis against the Vikings. My honorable mention wide receivers are Demaryius Thomas against the Chargers, Victor Cruz against the 49ers, and Reggie Wayne against the Jets. My honorable mention running backs are Adrian Peterson against the Redskins, Ray Rice against the Cowboys, Darren McFadden against the Falcons. And my honorable mention QBs are Ben Roethlisberger, who played last Thursday against the Titans, Peyton Manning against the Chargers, and Eli Manning against the 49ers. So thank you for coming on to the show. Enjoyed the doggone ride. Being cut short because of the information that we had in front of us, and I'll be heading off the show here very shortly. But before I head off, I want to bring up some of the college top 25 football scores at this time. Only the top 25. At the end of the third quarter, Kansas State is ahead of Iowa State 24-14. That's number six, Kansas State, ahead of Iowa State 24-14. In the third quarter, number 13, Oklahoma, 39. Texas, number 15, Texas, 8. In the fourth quarter, number 20, Rutgers, 23-7 over Syracuse. Other games that will be coming up later on today, we have number 1, Alabama, at Missouri. Number 3, South Carolina, at number 9, LSU. Number 4, Florida, at Vanderbilt. Number 5, West Virginia, at Texas Tech. Number 17, Stanford, at number 7, Notre Dame. Number 8, Ohio State, at Indiana. Number 10, Oregon State, at BYU. Number 11, Southern Cal, at Washington. Boston College, at number 12, Florida State. Tennessee, at number 19, Mississippi State. Fordham at number 21, Cincinnati. number 22 Texas A&M at number 23 Louisiana Tech, Fresno State at number 24 Boise State, Illinois at number 25 Michigan, and then we have a final with a top 25 team, number 18 Louisville, 45 Pittsburgh, 35. So this is JC, and thank you for showing up for the Sports Lounge. And I think we had a pretty good show today. And I wish you a great weekend, and I'll see you back on Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, noon Eastern time, for 3 hours of just sports talk radio.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.